please they have the Jenna Danscombe, tell us about Universal Planet Tech and Grade for United Trinity Grants.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming out to my thesis defense. I'll be talking about the homomorphic expansion or homomorphic universal finite type invariant of multi-tribal graphs. First, I would like to explain the overall goal a little bit and maybe justify just a tiny bit why we care about this. Knot theory is not usually considered a very algebraic subject, and this is due to several factors, but among other things, knots have not much algebraic structure as a space. There's a few operations that you can do, for example, knot cabling or connected sum, but these don't merely make the space of knots a finitely generated space. Also, there are some algebraic knot invariants which give you an answer like a number or a polynomial, but they are not homomorphisms with respect to some rich enough structure. So my thesis is based on an idea of drawers, which was raised in a paper that, which you can find on the web, it's called the algebraic knot theory, a call for action. And the idea is that you embed the space of knots in a larger, richer space. This richer space is called multi-tribal in graphs, and this is actually a finitely generated algebraic structure. And then you try to find a universal finite type invariant, which I will explain in the talk what that means. It's essentially a very strong invariant, and we try to find one which also commutes with all the operations that make the space of multi-tribal in graphs a finitely generated structure. So we are essentially looking for a homomorphism. And one reason that this is something to care about is because the language of multi-tribal in graphs works very well in topology. It's a lot of topology can be phrased conveniently in this language. And so for lack of time, I will leave that statement vague and mysterious like that. So let me start defining the things that we'll need. First of all, just tribal graphs without any knottedness. These are just graphs that have three edges meeting at every vertex. This is why they are called tribal. And we require all the edges to be oriented. And also, we require cyclic orientations of all the at each vertex, which is just a cyclic ordering of the edges meeting at that vertex. And we allow loops, which is just circles without any vertex, and also allow multiple edges, as you can see in the picture. And a few words to explain why we care about these cyclic orientations. We can use this to define a thickening of the graph, which will be a graph made of, an oriented surface, a graph made of a ribbon. And we do this the following way. We take each vertex and thicken it to this thickened Y shape. And because of the cyclic orientation, this defines a distinction between the two sides of this Y. So if you take the right-hand rule, then the way your thumb is pointing will be colored white, and the way your thumb is not pointing will be colored blue. And then we glue all these things together to get an oriented surface, and when we are gluing together, we are gluing them in an orientation-preserving way, so the blue side gets matched up with the blue side, and the white side gets matched up with the white side. And this guarantees that you are getting an oriented surface, which we call the thickening of the graph. Now, on to multi-tribal graphs. Multi-tribal graphs are just embeddings of such a thickened graph into R3. We consider this up to isotopy. And because it is a ribbon, this also includes the information includes a framing on the graph, where framing on the graph is a choice of normal vector everywhere, where the normal vectors are required to coincide at each vertex. So because it's a ribbon, you always think of the normal vector as the normal vector perpendicular to the ribbon and pointing towards the blue side. And this guarantees that they will match up at the vertices. So this picture is an example for such a multi-traveling graph. And one more piece of terminology, the skeleton of a multi-traveling graph is just the traveling graph behind it. It's the combinatorial object behind it. Now, multi-traveling graphs have a characterization similar to what you're familiar with if you know about knots. They can be characterized as graph diagrams modulo a set of Rademeister moves, just like in the knot case. So we are modding out by Rademeister 2, 3, and 4. Rademeister 2 and 3 are same as for the knot, so 2 is being able to pull apart two strands that are behind each other. 3 is being able to pull a strand behind a crossing or in front of a crossing. And 4 is similar to Rademeister 3, but it has a vertex instead of the crossing. Now, this is a slight lie. As Fan pointed out in one of his comments on my thesis, it's not quite just, so what I'm doing here is dropping Rademeister 1. What is Rademeister 1? It's pulling a king straight. So let me show you. So if you have a ribbon and you have a king on it, like this, then if you pull this king straight, you're going to get a double twist on the ribbon. So pulling a king straight changes the framing. So this is why we are not having Rademeister 1, because we want to work with frame graphs. But it's not quite true that dropping Rademeister 1 just introduces framing. It actually adds a little bit more than framing. I will nevertheless pretend that this is true. It's a small, subtle point, and it is fixed in my thesis, but for the sake of simplicity, I will not talk about it in my talk. By k comma, strict k, we will denote all the knottings of the graph gamma. So this, usually the big gamma, the capital gamma, will denote just the combinatorial object, and the lowercase gamma will be a knotted triangular graph. So K gamma is all the knottings of one particular graph. I promise that this is a richer space than knots, and in particular that it is a finitely generated algebraic structure. And this is due to a number of operations that we can define on these graphs. What are these? The first and simplest one is orientation switch. That is, if you have an edge, you can switch the orientation of that edge. The second one is edge delete. If you have you can specify an edge of either a trivalent graph or a multi-trivalent graph, doesn't matter. And you can delete this edge. Now, when you delete the edge, these two vertices become bivalent instead of trivalent, so we declare that they just disappear. They stop being vertices, and those edges get fused. Of course, for this to work, the orientations of the edges have to match up. The third operation is called edge unzip. If you have a part of the graph like this, you specify the edge, then you can think of this as the ribbon being made of a zipper, and you unzip the zipper. or cut lengthwise along this horizontal ribbon, and then you'll get this new graph where again these two vertices will disappear and the orientations of all of the edges have to match. Note that for this we need at least the cyclic orientation at the vertices. Otherwise we wouldn't know whether to match these edges up like this or like that. So framing takes care of this, or sort of thickening the cyclic orientation and all those. Now connected sum. If you have, this is a piece of one trivalent graph or not a trivalent graph, this is a piece of another. And we can connect them if we specify one edge of each, then we can connect them by just putting a new edge connecting these two specified edges. And there's a few things that we have to declare, like which way this edge will be oriented and how will the cyclic orientation be at each of the two created vertices, but I suppress all this in the notation. There's also a little work to check that this is well defined, but it is. Okay. Now, the other thing that I promised you is an invariant that is defined on these things, not a trivalent graph, and I promised that it will be a homomorphism. But what does it mean to be a homomorphism? It means that it commutes with the operations. In other words, the operations have to make sense on the target space. So I have to tell you what the target space is, and I have to define these operations on the target space to for my goal to even make sense. So what is the target space? The target space is essentially the associated graded space of multi-trivalent graphs. And this is this can be thought of in terms of chord diagrams. So let me go into a little bit of detail on this. For the associated graded space to make sense, you need a filtration. So we need to filter the space of multi-trivalent graphs somehow. First of all, we extend the space by allowing formal linear combinations. I take the field Q, but if you don't like Q, you can take your favorite field of zero characteristic. It will also work. So we extend. We allow formal linear combinations of multi-trivalent graphs. And now I want to tell you what the nth piece of this filtration is. So at the nth piece of this filtration will look familiar if you're familiar with the finite type invariants of knots. So we essentially take resolutions of m singular multi-trivalent graphs. What do I mean by this? An m singular multi-trivalent graph is an inversion of a trivalent graph in R3, so that there are m singularities, each of which is a transverse double point. So you have an almost embedding of a trivalent graph, except there are m transverse double points. And a resolution is just replacing each double point by a difference of an overcrossing and an undercrossing. So if you have an m singular KTG, the resolution of this is a linear combination of 2 to the m things, where each of the 2 to the m things is a certain choice of resolution of the m double points. And then, once you have a filtration, you take the associated graded as always. It will be the sum as m goes from 0 to infinity. It's a decreasing filtration, so it's the sum of all fm mod out by fm plus 1. So we mod out by m singular by m plus 1 singular. This, each of these graded pieces has a nice combinatorial description in terms of chord diagrams. Essentially, the way we think about it is representing each double point by a chord. If you think of an M singular KTG, then this is an inversion of a trivalent graph into R3. And each double point has two pre-images in the original graph, which is just a combinatorial object. So a chord diagram is just taking m pairs of points on the skeleton of the knotted triangle graph and connecting these by the chords. And this is a completely just a combinatorial thing. So the shape of the chords doesn't matter, the exact position of the chord endings doesn't matter, it's just the order of the chord endings on the edges. So you could say up to orientation preserving the chromatism. So the mth piece of mth graded peaks will be represented by chord diagrams of degree m, so chord diagrams with m chords on the skeleton gamma. So you have this skeleton, you have m chords on it, and it will be modded out by two relations, the 4T relation and the vertex invariance relation. These are as shown. What do these pictures mean? The 4T relation, as you can see, involves only two chords, and parts of the large part of the graph is missing. All I'm considering of the graph is three little curves that are somewhere on the graph. So what I mean is that there's a whole big outside part of this picture that includes the rest of the graph and m minus two chords, but those are the same throughout the relation. And all that changes is the positioning of these two chords. And similarly, the VI relation. These plus minus signs for the VI relation mean they depend on whether the edge is oriented out of the vertex or coming into the vertex. And these come obviously from topology, but right now I won't go into proving them. And the last kind of preliminary thing that I need to tell you is how the operations are defined on this space. First of all, the orientation switch operation works the following way. It's a map from A of gamma to A of gamma with the orientation of edge E switched. And if you take a chord diagram on gamma, then the image of this will be the same chord diagram. Well, it will be on not gamma, but with on gamma with that particular edge with switched orientation. And if you had k chords ending on this edge, then you will multiply that chord diagram by negative 1 to the k. Why is this the case? Because if you think of the chords as just being the double points, which is an overcrossing minus an undercrossing, then if you have an overcrossing and you switch the orientation of one of the edges, that becomes an undercrossing and vice versa. So an overcrossing becomes an undercrossing, an undercrossing becomes an overcrossing, so this difference of an overcrossing minus an undercrossing will change sign. So there will be a sign for each of the chords that end on that particular edge. Edge delete is similarly, an operation that goes from A of gamma to A of gamma with that specified edge deleted. And I'll just tell you what it is without any explanation. If any chords end on the edge that you're deleting, then that chord diagram will be mapped to zero. Otherwise, all the chords will be unchanged. Unzip, it will go from A of gamma to A of gamma with that the specified edge unzip. And it's a little more complicated. So if you have k chords ending on this edge, then unzip will do the following. It will be a sum of 2 to the k chord diagrams, where each of the chords has a choice of whether to end. So this edge will have two children. It will have each chord will have a choice whether to go to the first child or the second child. So So in this particular example, there's three chords ending on E, and the result, this thing will be mapped to a sum of 8 chord diagrams, where the 8 will come from each of the chords has a choice between the two daughter edges. And the last one is connected sum. So connected sum is a binary operation. So it's a map from A gamma cross A gamma prime, where gamma and gamma prime are the two graphs that you're connecting. And it will go to the connected A of the connected sum of these two things. And it essentially does nothing. So you just connect the two skeleta, and you do nothing to the cores. It takes a bit of checking to see that this is well defined, because cores might end on the edges that you're connecting, and it doesn't matter where you put, where you attach the connecting edge in relation to the core endings, but that is true. Finally, let me tell you what a universal finite type invariant is. I've told you essentially this. There's a projection from M singular KTGs to the mth piece of the associated gradient. And this maps an M singular KTGs to its core diagram, where its core diagram is what I described before. So for the M double points, you take the pre-image and connect, take the pre-images of each double point and connect the pre-images by cores. And the universal finite type invariant is just an invariant that takes, that eats not trivial graphs and takes values in A, where A is the collection of all A gamma for all possible. Well, I guess if you go from knottings of one specific, so if you take knottings of one specific trivalent graph, then the values will be in A of that trivalent graph. And what we require is that for any M singular KTG gamma, the value of the invariant in the lowest order is just its core diagram. And in higher orders, you may have other stuff. And it is homomorphic if it commutes with all the operations, just like a homomorphism is defined everywhere. Just a little note, a universal finite type invariant is not a finite type invariant. A finite type invariant of type M is an invariant that vanishes on the M plus first piece of the filtration. But the reason it's called a universal finite type invariant is because it contains all the information that is conveyed by any finite type invariant. Just a little bit of propaganda before I go on to describe what I've actually done. In my thesis, is that, so this forms, the KTGs, like I said, form an algebraic structure. It is finitely generated, as I promised, although I didn't go into any details of that, but it's generated by the tetrahedron and the twisted tetrahedron. And it includes knots and links. It's a good language for studying topology, which I may have a couple of minutes to say something about at the end. And this construction that I've just described for A is actually a canonical construction called projectivization. So this filtration that that I told you about is not just any filtration. It is the filtration by powers of the augmentation ideal. And this is not true for knots. This is only true for knotted trigonal graphs. For knots, the finite height filtration is not powers of the augmentation ideal. And the universal finite height invariant is called an expansion in this algebra language. So from now on, I will usually use expansion because it's a shorter word. So let me rephrase or repeat the goal. Which was my goal with my thesis. The we want to construct a homomorphic expansion for an octet triangle in graphs. And as a special case, this will include knots and links. And there's an expansion known for knots and links, has been known for a long time. This is the Concievich integral that's usually denoted by Z. And this is homomorphic with respect to what little algebraic structure knots have. So it's a promising strategy to try to extend the Concievich integral from knots to knotty triangle in graphs and see if what we get is homomorphic. So this extension has also been done. It was done by a series of papers by Murakami and Otsuki, Tamle and Murakami, and also Tamle and Chatti. Most of these people, as well as Dora and Swansea, which I showed here. And this was done around 1997. But a common feature of all of these papers is that they use Drinfeld's theory of associators. So what I did differently is I could describe their approach as a top-down approach and mine as a bottom-up approach. So I construct the extension by somewhat more elementary means by taking Concievich's original definition and applying Concievich methods to construct the extension, and then this will eventually lead to a construction of an associator. And in fact, it leads to one parameter family of invariants, but actually the only useful one of these is the one that was constructed in those papers. At least the only useful one for our purposes. So let me try to go a little bit into the Concievich integral. I will do it right away for graphs, but this is the way it's done for knots. So for knots, you'll just take a Morse embedding of a knot in R3, where the R3 you consider as the complex numbers cross R, and this R coordinate, the height, is the Morse function. And you use this picture to and a big integral formula to compute the value of the invariant. Now what I like to do is just put a picture of a graph instead of a picture of a knot and see what happens. Okay, so let's try to understand this formula. The value of the invariant will be an A, and it will be kind of, it will be in the completion of A actually. So it will be an infinite linear combination of chord diagrams on the skeleton of the graph. It's done the following way. First of all, it will be a sum as m goes from 0 to infinity. M is the degree, so it's the number of chords. And then you'll be integrating over a simplex. The simplex will be this t1, t2, t3, t4, where it's required that t1 is the smallest, t2 is the maximum, blah, 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 up to tm. So this is an m-dimensional simplex. And actually, you also require that all these ti's are non-critical and non-vertex levels. So it's cut into connected components. The simplex is cut into connected components by the vertex and critical point levels. Then you're summing, and this is the important part, you're summing over all pairings zi, zi prime, where zi and zi prime are two points on, the complex coordinates of two points on the curve at the level ti, and we require that these are continuous functions on each of the connected components of the simplex. So between a critical point and the vertex, these chords are required to move smoothly on the same, don't jump between strands. And let me jump to describing this deeply because it fits here in the discussion. So this is sort of the heart of it. For each of these pairings, you can just take the points of the pairing and connect them by chords, and that will define a chord diagram on the skeleton of the graph. So that's the DP. So all the rest of this thing is just computation of the coefficient of DP in the value of the invariant. So this DP is the chord diagram. And then how do we compute the value? Well, that's the integral. So we integrate this 1 over 2 pi I to the m is just a normalization factor. Negative 1 to the p down arrow is so you count for each pairing, you count the number of strands, with the number of endings on strands which are descending, and take negative 1 to that power, so it's just a sign. And then the differential form you're integrating is this form that's the pullback. What I mean by this form is the pullback of this from C to the M to the simplex. And it's dZi minus dZi prime over Ci minus Zi prime. And this denominator will kind of become important. Okay. Any questions about that?
So in that sum, there'll be like, in your sum, there'll be like two n terms if there's n.
If there's n strands at that
level. Including, well, is it, sorry, is two n n? Or n
yeah.
Not interesting.
No. The order matters, although...
But you should give you pick two of them, right?
Yes, but it's... So if I switch them, that's a different one.
And if they're the same? No.
They... Sorry, they're not... Yeah, you're right. They are not allowed to be the same. Yeah, they have to be different. Okay, so... that was a nice try, but there's several problems with it. The first of all, and these problems are not all that surprising if you know the quantitative integral of knots, it has the same problems. But the same problems will arise here as beavers. So, first of all, it's not convergent. If you look at the previous slide for one more moment, this denominator here, zi minus zi prime. This, the absolute value of this is the length of the chord. So if you're getting close to a critical level, or if you're getting close to a vertex, then this will be unbounded. And actually the integral, not only the function, not only the integral, the integrand will not be bounded, but the function, the integral will be divergent. And this happens, it doesn't happen for knots if you don't care about framing, but it happens for frayed knots and links. And it was solved for frayed knots and links by Lei and Murakami in two papers that are among the references, and also by Gordino. And the approach we take is essentially Thumb Lei and Murakami's approach, just generalized for vertices, which generalizes really easily. So let me describe it in a few words. I'll take a vertex of a lambda shape. And what you do is you fix the scale mu, and for now let's fix an epsilon, but epsilon will run, epsilon will change. And you take the two strands and open them up to a distance mu at the vertex. And you start opening them up a distance epsilon from the vertex. And then in the picture that you use to compute the integral, you pretend that it looks like this. And also, these dotted parts are called, what we call them locally active. and these parts, we call them globally active, which means that chords from elsewhere can come and end on this part, but on this part not. So on this part, we only allow chords within this little picture, local chords, and global chords can come and end on the globally active part. Now, this will be, it's easier to see that the integral will be finite for each choice of epsilon, because we essentially eliminated the problem, that denominator being too small. But it's a bit of a technical computation to see that it converges as epsilon goes to zero. And this was also hand-waved a lot of this away in the original version of my thesis, and then fan pointed it out, so now it's actually written figures. Okay, so to be able to do this, we had to restrict to vertices of the lambda shape and the y shape. So we cannot allow a vertex to also be a maximum and three edges to go down on three edges or three edges to go up. And this will cause further problems. So the main further problem is that even though now we get a convergent thing, it is not an invariant. And this also happens in the knot case. If you look at this move, what happens in the knot case, it will be a Morse knot invariant, but it will not be invariant under this move which straightens the hub. In other words, a move that changes the number of critical points. And also, ours will not be invariant under moves that change the shape of the vertex. So there will be these missing moves that that are isotopies, but change the value of set. And there's actually a lot more than these, but we can apply syzygies to reduce the number of these missing moves to these three. And then the strategy is that we fix this by placing corrections on vertices and critical points. What does that mean? Corrections are little local chord diagrams that we place either on a critical point or on the vertex, and they will be different for the minimum, maxima, lambda, and y vertices. So that's why they are called lambda, y, u, and n. U and n live on one strand, and lambda and y, because of the vertex invariance relation, you can think of them as little chord diagrams that live on two strands. And then these moves that we are missing translate to equations in A. And the task is to solve this in A. And to this, I reproduced or drew inspiration from some results of those papers that I mentioned before by Tangle and the two Murakamis and Boronki. Although this is not my own favorite part of my thesis, I think I have to say it was the biggest difficulty in it. But let's go on. So this succeeds, and then we have a universal finite time invariant of multi-trigon graphs. The next question is, we were hoping that this would yield a homomorphic thing, since the original Gonsiewicz integral was homomorphic. So we could ask, is this homomorphic? And the answer is fairly annoying. It's almost homomorphic, but it isn't. So it commutes with orientation switch, edge delete, and connected sum, but it does not commute with us. And the behavior of Z with respect to unzip is described by a formula that, again, in the proof of this formula, I reproduce a result by Le and Murakami. So if it was to commute, this is Z of gamma, the original graph. This is Z of the unzipped gamma, where I unzipped this edge. If it was to be homomorphic, then all that should happen, this stuff shouldn't be here. It should just be this sum of 2 to the k chord diagrams. That's what it would mean to commute, because Z of u of gamma should be the same as u of Z of gamma. Okay. and U of Z of gamma is just like I said about the ANSI operation. Is just taking, if k chords end on this particular edge, then it goes to a sum to do k things where each chord has a choice between the two children on where to go. However, that's not what happens. There's also this additional stuff appearing on the daughter edges, and this additional stuff is this factors of nu, where nu is the invariant of the unknown. Let me just leave it at that. So this is the obstruction. This is the problem. And then you could ask whether it's possible that this is just a fault of this particular construction, whether there's another construction of a universal finite type invariant of multi-trivalent graphs that is homomorphic. And this is a theorem that, so the everything up to here was published in a paper in 2008. This was kind of left out of that paper, although it would have fit, but I didn't manage to prove it at that time, is that that doesn't exist. So any homomorphic expansion of multi-trivalent graphs will not be homomorphic, and the problem is that it will either commute with unzip or with the linked connected sum, but not both. And on the other hand, we can't just drop unzip or just drop the linked connected sum, because then we lose finite generation. So the next problem is how to fix this. To fix this, we have to somehow modify the space itself, because no finite type invariant exists on that space. And we do this, this is in a joint paper with Rohr that's submitted but not accepted yet, is by essentially just introducing some extra combinatorics. We do this two ways. One is a little bit more conceptual, one is simpler and more similar to the original KTGs. So I have not that long, maybe 7 minutes, so let me just give you an idea really quickly. So this extra combinatorics is some dots on the skeleton. So we call them dotted KTGs. So these dots are bivalent vertices. So we allow bivalent vertices, and these will come in two varieties, either dots or anti-dots, which we denote by crosses. And it will have the following operations. Orientation switch, just like before. Cancel, which just means that if you have a neighboring dot and anti-dot, then you can kill them both. And a third one, which is called tree connected sum. This is a generalization of connected sum, but in fact it's a generalization of connected sum unzip and delete altogether. What you do is you have two KTGs, and they come with identical distinguished trees. And you take these identical distinguished trees, delete them, and connect the corresponding ends, three ends by straight lines, and place a dot on each of those connecting edges, or mark that they came from a new connection. The trees are allowed to have dots and crosses on them, but let me just ignore that. So chord diagrams are simple. They are just chord diagrams on dotted skeletons. The chord endings move across dots and crosses if the orientations continue each other, and if they face each other or go the other way, then there's a sign that comes in. But you can move chord endings over by connecting. And the induced operations are as you would expect. So orientation switch, as before, cancel doesn't do anything, and tree connected sum, if there's no chord endings on the trees, you just join the graph, do nothing to the chords. If there is chord endings of the tree on the trees, then first you use the vertex invariance relation to sweep all of them off, and then you have. And then the Kinnis theorem is that this is now finitely generated algebraic structure still. And there exists a homomorphic expansion on it. And this homomorphic expansion is actually a really simple alteration or alternation of the original Z, which is which was the one of the lot that coincided with the one previously constructed by Leonhard and Mora. So what we do is we just take this old one and place nu to the 1/2 near each dot and the nu to the negative 1/2 near each anti-dot. And this will make everything complete. So you could ask how come the old one was, in the old setting there was no homomorphic expansion and the new one there is, when the one way, I think the best way to explain this is that although you can emulate all the operations, all the old operations in this setting, so you can emulate connected sum and unzip and delete, the way you do that is that, for example, unzip will be a tree connected sum with one particular graph, one particular tree that you pick. And that is, so homomorphicity with respect to tree-connected sum is not the same as homomorphicity with respect to unzip, because tree-connected sum is a binary operation. So binary operation homomorphicity means that you just take z of the first one, z of this constant one, and do tree-connected sum on them. For homomorphicity on unzip, you would also need that z of this constant one be trivial, and that's not the case. So that's basically where the extra combinatorics saves the day. Really just wondering about the simple way. That is an equivalent construction in the sense that you can emulate the tree connected sum in this setting, and you can emulate this in the previous setting. And what we do basically is we restrict unzip. So we can only unzip an edge that has a dot on it, and in both of the children there will be dots in the result. And we also dot connected sum, so when you connect two graphs, you put a dot on the connected edge, that's all. And this is equivalent, and the same Z bricks. And the associated gradient is as you would expect. So I only have 1 minute to say something about applications, but there's a couple of applications. We can use this to construct an associator. It will be a Z nu of a dotted tetrahedron dotted in a particular way. And one can prove that this satisfies all the defining equations of the associator of an associator, and also has some symmetric properties, which are sort of, you can see them very nicely from the symmetry of the tetrahedron. Also, we can use it to find a simple proof that the LMO invariant is well behaved under the Kirby Manslide move. This was proved in a paper by Lin, Murakami, Murakami, and Matsuki in 1987, I think. And essentially, this approach illuminates all the need for local considerations and associators. So you get something that's very, like a very short proof. And then one application that is hoped for but doesn't really exist yet is algebraic knot theory. So a number of knot properties, topological properties, are definable or easy to phrase in this language, and we can use the setting of knotted triangle in graphs and this homomorphic invariant to get algebraic necessary conditions, for example, for a not being ribbon or not having a certain genus. But the problem, the reason that this is not all that useful yet, is because this set is extremely hard to compute. So basically, we only know its value for a few really simple things. And for it to be more useful in a computational sense, what one would probably need to do is to find a suitable quotient of the target space, which is big enough to still be meaningful, but small enough so that computations would become possible.
Actually an exam, so the formal questioning will happen anyway in the other room.
So if there's any informal questions.
So can it be generalized to other graphs, not necessarily trigonometric?
So the reason we work with trigonometric graphs, so first of all, it's only the combinatorics, right? So in terms of topology, you can, for any graph, you can take a spanning tree and shrink that spanning tree to a point, and you get just a bouquet of circles. So topologically, whether it's trivalent or four-valent or six-valent doesn't really matter. But the reason that we work with trivalent graphs is because this is where the combinatorics works. So there's other ways that you can get a finitely generated space of some graphs with some operations, but there doesn't exist a universal finite type theory, a homomorphic universal finite type theory. So it's there's some subtle combinatorics there that's it's kind of a matter of luck whether it works out or not. And so far this is the only one that we know works, so we work with it, but there may be other ones.
Who began the study of non-trivial graphs?
Dylan Thurston? I know that Dylan Thurston wrote a...
I think Tamila should answer this.
I mean, in this context, maybe... I think the first paper of Urofani and Ofsky, when they tried to use TTFT as a conception, but certainly people before that also studied not a trivial.
Is it in the other room or is it in here?
No, it's in the other room.
So maybe we thank the speaker for the talk.